I had just been given my big Bible of what to do, when, what to say, how to say everything. There was nothing there in case of emergency. And this is genuinely true. Week two, someone phoned up the radio station and he said to me, there's a bomb in the building, get out. Hello and welcome to Land and Deliver. We are the podcast that helps you make messages land and delivering them in ways that make people care and act. And if you're responsible for a message and what happens after it's delivered, then this podcast is for you.
I'm Louise Chandler-Rutt, and today we are talking about the topic of how to share difficult news without losing trust. Now, I don't want it to sound negative, and I don't want this topic to be something that you fear or worry about. But when you work in the world of communications, yes, there's lovely stories. It's like when I was a journalist, there's always positive stories about innovation and something new. But ultimately, there is also stories that are difficult. There is news that you have to share with your teams internally or publicly with members of the public. And that can be really tricky to manage. And today, I think it's really important to talk about how we can share difficult news without losing trust and what that means for you when you're working in marketing and communications.
Yeah, it's a very difficult one to tread, isn't it? If you think about the consequence of getting that wrong, you know, it has an impact in pretty much every aspect of what you are as a business, the people that you're communicating to, and you know, the external outside your business. The impacts are massive, aren't they?
They certainly are. And I think for the sake of clarity, what we're talking about today with some examples includes things like when you're announcing redundancies, any big changes, when you're talking about maybe a senior leader who is leaving, maybe not by choice, and or they may be leaving in difficult circumstances. And when you work in this industry, these things may be something that you anticipate and know, or they may land quite last minute, where you're like, oh, okay, we've now got to make this announcement. And what I often find in this scenario is that your experience and your training certainly helps, but today we're going to run you through some examples of why difficult news often fails. We'll talk about what you should include, what you should avoid, and think of this as your checklist, your tip sheet, your guidance that's going to help you out. So that if you are in a working environment as a comms person internally or externally for communications and PR, this will help to guide you through the types of things that you should be aware of.
So when bad news lands, then what happens?
Oh, wow. So depending on the scenario, what happens is, and I'm going to be totally honest with you here, Darren, and also you, dear listener and viewer, comms is sometimes the last person to know.
Oops.
Sometimes, oh, didn't know that was coming. Sometimes it's a case of the business and organisation knew and was so worried about the story and information being leaked, comms is the last person to know. So sometimes it's a case of you are presented with information and you are trying to catch up in real time because this scenario has already started to unfold and you're actually starting to say, right, okay, what's happening? Other times you'll know that some announcements are coming, sometimes you won't. So I think that's the first thing to be aware of, and to kind of, don't take it personally, because we feel when comms, well, why did no one tell us? That's how I've reacted before.
Because you know, when bad things happen, everyone gets quite defensive. If you're the person, you know, that has to talk to comms, or you know, you're building a department that have to say what's going on, and bizarrely, there is a lack of transparency, isn't there? Why, you know, because they are afraid of consequences, and you know, are afraid to lean in, and probably actually not trained enough to deal with these kind of crises. And that's another whole other conversation we can do. But that's really, really important, isn't it? That you've got to try and handle that.
You have. There's a lot going on when something like this happens. There's a lot, and your brain is firing in all different directions. You're trying to figure out, what do you need to know now? How things are going to unfold in the kind of short to medium or long-term future? What you can tell people, who needs to, it's almost, do you know what? I think we should have called this episode, it's a game of traitors. And it's not because we're calling people traitors, it's because it's a game of personalities and trust and who you tell what to when, and ooh, who are they going to say it to? And it can really feel that way. So if you don't want to wear a cloak and be part of traitors, what you can do is remember that often leadership will tell you things and information will land on your doorstep that makes you say, okay, right. What? And, you know, there's some ethics here as well and courtesies that come into place. But also it's for you to create those next clear steps and manage expectations about what it means.
But also the quality of the conversation that's being delivered to you might not be the language that you need. And you've got to do some decoding of yourself, haven't you?
You really have. This is where I think you've got to be that critical ear, ask some really clear questions. And dare I say it, you might be the voice in the room that people don't necessarily want to hear because you're asking questions. For example, if it's a scenario where people really want to disguise or want to, there's a story of redundancies, but they're really worried about how it impacts on their financial results or it impacts on staff morale. It's for you to understand the story and then work out, okay, how are we going to convey it and communicate it in a way that is impactful and meaningful while protecting the reputation of the organisation? And we have got some ideas today of some things that you can include.
But I think also it's worth noting from a primal level, the problem when you're delivering, let's say, redundancies, is that the person who's made the decision to make the redundancies has actually done it for the benefit of business. They're in their own little bubble. And when things are all hunky-dory, yes, they're the loveliest person in the world and they get on with you and they'll ask you how your family is. But right now the business is in trouble. They've got to make redundancies. Yeah. And all of a sudden that can really do lasting damage if they're in there. Okay, that person's gone. Thank goodness I've saved the rest of the company. And they think about money. But in that moment, they're not thinking about the people impacted that are leaving and the people that are staying in the business and reeling from the fact that their boss, who is lovely and jovial, has done this and has appeared to now, you know, prioritise the money and the business over people. And that can do some really bad damage if not handled properly.
I think it can. I think in any particular announcement or story that is being shared, there is always the human element to it. And I think if you mishandle the story in the announcement and you don't include that, you can find that you're left wanting. There are certain scenarios where over the years you've heard about big corporate companies making announcements about redundancies, but not doing it in a way where not everyone was invited to the call or the meeting.
Yes, tell us about a P&O, isn't it?
Yeah, indeed. This is basically where an announcement was made. And I'm going to read this here just to make sure I get it correct.
being a bit legal here.
Well, yeah, but also to make sure I convey the right story if you're not familiar with it.
Yeah.
So it is a bit of an old one from 2022, but they terminated staff, around 800 staff members without meaningful notice. And it basically remains a defining example of how not to communicate redundancies. Staff were told via pre-recorded video and the legal backlash and reputation damage was huge. Now, one of my best friends is a HR consultant and the risks of this were massive, not only for those who were leaving, but also for those left behind, because the morale within the company in that instance would have felt a bit like, oh gosh, now what's going to happen? The uncertainty that surrounds that. It's the tone as well. And I think going back to your previous point about the human element, you know, it's impersonal. It really is personal. Like you say, these are people's lives. These are people who, you know, it's not just a job to some people. It may be a lifestyle as well in terms of how long they've worked there. And the mistrust and the paranoia and all these feelings that came in. I can't imagine.
Just as a side though, I remember working for quite a big radio group and we were very big and speaking to the boss. And it was lovely to hear him say when it was just a personal aside, he said, you know, when he had to restructure the company, it was quite a massive restructure. He said, you know, at the end of the day, you know, you have a family, I have a family, everyone in this business, whatever we decide, he was always conscious that they are humans just like him and they have family just like him. And in a sense, we're all the same.
Wow. And I think I obviously didn't know about that scenario and I wasn't there. But if I was there hearing that, I'm not saying it makes things easier, but it makes it a bit more palatable in a way when you're hearing a message like that. I've got a very good friend who worked for a housing construction company, and she found out that her and her team had lost their job on the news.
It's not great, is it?
Did not know anything about it. Went to work as usual, logged off on the Friday at 5:30 over the weekend. News came on. Oh, I've lost my job. That's how they found out. And then basically when they went in on the Monday, certain members of senior staff weren't available for comment or for meetings. And as a colleague, that's really, really tricky to manage. However, we're going to help you navigate. What should you include? So there's a few things here. Grab your pen and paper or check out the show notes.
It'll all be in the show notes. There'll be a checklist in the show notes. Landanddeliver.co.uk.
So I think as the comms person who's trying to navigate this particular scenario, one thing you can do is think of context before the announcement. I appreciate that times are of the essence and you really want to get everything out quickly, but pause and just reflect on what's happening and why. And also just look at the realities around what's happening and why. Sometimes these things are external factors. It's political, it's social, it's economical, it's technological, the reasons. But just look at the context before the announcement, because what we also have to remember is some of these announcements that we're dealing with are not just in a silo. There may be wider industry repercussions. There may be wider business situations around it. So by looking at that context before the announcement, it really helps us to place this information and make sure also how we're not only going to tell people now, but how if the story evolves, what we do to keep that information relevant and up to date. Second thing I would say is look at the impact and the scope. And this really helps us to shape who should know what and when. I've worked on campaigns and comms pieces where there's been a particular project where a housing facility needed to be shut down in the social space. And when we were working out this announcement, we really had to work out who is affected and in what order, roughly. It's not always a domino effect. However, what we had to work out is who needed to know certain bits of information, how were they impacted and when, and what changes and what stays the same, because that really allowed us to help create a message and what we were going to put out. The next thing is I think we get so used to broadcasting and putting an announcement out into the world. We also have to remember this needs to be a bit of a two-way street and be interactive. So we need to look at the support package of who is affected, but then who can people talk to? And this is when you start going to maybe HR, IT, finance, and having those confidential conversations to say, right, actually, when this announcement is made, are you going to be available to be a part of that briefing to answer questions around expenses or finances or around people's contracts, for example? Because if you make an announcement and you don't bring in those other people, they're sat there going, I didn't know this was coming. They're then going to have to field a whole host of inquiries that they're not equipped to host. They don't know how to answer. So that support package and listening mechanisms, when you're going to make this announcement, talk to your senior leadership team and say, look, guys, I know your diary's busy, but can you please lock down some time for an hour a week? So after the announcement is made, people will get a chance to do it, ask me anything, Q&A sessions, drop in, could be anonymous or not. Because if you put it out there, you don't inform the necessary teams who are going to be fielding some of the inquiries, and you don't allocate that time for people to ask questions, it leaves so much uncertainty. And also you're leaving room for the narrative to evolve and spiral out of control without trying to actually brief people and update them. And I think the final thing on the checklist is to reaffirm that purpose. Keep coming back to the why this is happening. And it's not always going to be nice news, as we've said. It's not always going to be the easiest pill to swallow. But what you're doing is reinforcing maybe your long-term vision and mission. Maybe you're trying to assign some new brand values or rules to what you're doing. And you need to reaffirm that purpose to make sure that people understand the reason for the changes that are coming.
I think it was, I remember a time when just after COVID, I was working for a company, and the bigger parent company that owned us had to make quite substantial redundancies following the impact of COVID. And it was massive. And what they decided to do was to do a series of webinars to manage that process because it was so big and they didn't want to do everything by email and to make sure everyone saw at the same time. Because that's really difficult. If you've got, if you're having to make something like, you know, hundreds of redundancies, especially after COVID was a massive impact on some companies, actually, it wasn't a pleasant experience. But by explaining the process on a webinar and taking moderated questions and answers, so, you know, there was, you know, because people can, you know, obviously quite rightly feel quite emotional about it and quite impacted by it, it was in a way quite successful in managing that message by having a series of weekly webinars where you could literally talk to the director, the CEO, and then they were able to manage that process a lot more effectively. But people were then asked to ask questions in the moment to say, okay, is this possible? Is that possible? Or whatever. And so whilst it wasn't an ideal scenario, the people that were left were, you know, able to move on, and, you know, then they start to rebuild the company again and, you know, to make the best of it that, that they could.
I think I'll throw something into the mix here. And as you're listening and watching this, you may have thought of this. If not, see how this lands with you. If in this scenario of redundancies and you are talking internally to your colleagues and your team, if you're internal communications is a well-oiled machine, you'll know the best way to put messages out there. And this is what tests it. Because what you don't want is to say, right, we've got an announcement, right? How are we going to do it? Oh, we don't know. What channels? Oh, what do we, how do we tell people? How do we reach people? I was writing a blog recently about how to connect with your colleagues who are not laptop bound. Because sometimes in some businesses, not everyone receives comms via their laptop.
Yeah.
Some people are working different shifts, different times of the day and night, different time zones. They don't have a phone attached to them. They don't have a laptop attached to them. How are you going to reach them? If your internal communications is robust and well executed, you will know how to make these announcements. And I'm going to come to in a moment tips to upskill your comms team and also what to avoid. But I think I wanted to put that out there now, that what you're doing when you're announcing difficult news, in the moment, you're announcing difficult news. Yes, that's obvious. But what you're also doing is testing and understanding your internal communications and what works well. Because if you land it particularly well, you will be able to make sure that people are hearing what they and getting the information they need.
Yeah.
Let's also talk about what to avoid. So we know what you should include: context before announcement, impact and scope, look at support and listening mechanisms, and reaffirm purpose. And what to avoid: jargon. Jargon and acronyms and not explaining them. You can use jargon if you want, but keep us with you, please. Keep us on the journey with you where we know what that means. Because often with these announcements, it's quite complex. People may not have been through the situation before and they don't know what all this means. And their brain's working 100 miles an hour.
Well, I suppose also if you're the person communicating that bad news, you have got a lot on your plate as it is already, and you instinctively jump to the jargon, quote unquote, that you are comfortable talking in. You know, I've worked in the environment sector where we've needed to make, you know, videos for them, and it's quite difficult to get them, and also a pharmaceutical actually, to get them to kind of chop out of that. And you know, no one ever asked for anything to be made more complicated. And so the connecting that is really important.
I think so. And I think from my experience of working on communication campaigns, especially in local government, sometimes it is cutbacks. It's news around changes to services and how we communicate that. And I think this is where you start to learn about best practice and what to avoid. One of the other things as well is don't just say it once. People will not always receive the information that one time. People absorb and consume information at different times and in different ways. So avoid the one and done, the kind of, right, I've told you and that's it. Because people don't always take that message first time, or they might do and they're absorbing it and they need to be told it again because it's going to impact and affect them in different ways. And I know there's been times when I've worked on campaigns where it's been a case of, all right, we're going to have to tell people, for example, that, I don't know, there's a new parking scheme coming in. Well, what you don't want is people saying, you told me, you didn't tell me a parking new enforcement was coming in and now I'm getting loads of parking tickets. No, you need to be able to communicate it a few times and having and remembering that as well. We know it. So we think, oh, we told people, it's fine. No, we need to be able to think of ways that actually we're going to drip feed the information.
Do you know what? It's really quick thing here, actually. Talking about that, I think it's really, really important to test that message, because I did some media training for a local government who in a certain town that we should not mention, because there's been an election since. And I was saying, oh, yeah, there's loads of potholes around here. And they said, well, we did a campaign as a pothole app. I didn't know about it. And they looked at me to say, well, you should have done. We told you. And I'm thinking, no, I'm the person that's heard this and I haven't heard this for whatever reason. And I'm not stupid.
Yeah.
And it was really, really interesting. It was testing their kind of bias and to go, well, we put it out 2 years ago. You should have remembered.
But potholes happen all the time, right?
Yeah.
So you've got to keep telling people. Absolutely. The thing to avoid as well is avoiding talking at people. Make sure it's interactive, making sure it's you're bringing people with you. Don't assume that, well, people know that already. We've told them that already. Making sure it is that two-way interaction. And nowadays, we don't have any excuse. We've got lots of avenues where people can write, email, text, WhatsApp, comment on socials, DMs. You know, don't confuse people too much by giving them a long list of communication channels to get feedback. But really make sure, I've worked on campaigns before. One was about closing some libraries. And what we basically said, and it was really valid feedback, all the feedback was digital. And then it was like, hang on a minute, what about if people want to write in? Because the audience you're talking to are more of a mature age group. And they may want to actually do a written survey rather than a digital one. Or actually, what if someone is partially sighted? What have you got to make sure that their views are... So that inclusivity as well, where you're not just talking at people, but you're looking at your audience of who you're trying to include in the conversation and making sure that they're involved. And don't leave leaders unprepared. As part of your plans, sometimes we can feel that actually we're putting messages out into the wider world or into our internal colleagues' staffing systems. But you have to make sure that your leaders are prepared and briefed as well. And not just because they may be client or customer or staff facing, but because they will be going to meetings that are with other layers of the business and they will need to know. So when you are planning any announcements and news that's going to be shared, in the moment, it's done. But then say to your senior leader, look, where are you tomorrow at 9 a.m? Where are you tomorrow at midday? Not that you want to speak to them 3 or 4 times a day, but what opportunities will I have to keep you up to date? And they will respect that and value it rather than, oh, it's done now. But then things evolve and change, or there's some outcomes and you haven't told them. Can't find them. They're too busy. Next thing you know, news gets out and they're saying, I didn't know. Embarrassing. Make sure that you leave leaders prepared rather than underprepared.
Basically, you've got their back, haven't you?
You have. You've got their back, but you've built in that time and that informed consideration to say, I'm going to make sure that I keep you in the loop. And they'll respect that and that trust will be there. So let's talk about tips to upskill your comms team. As part of your checklist and your tip sheet from today's episode, there's so much preparation that goes into this. I actually did an exercise once that was all about if a bomb had happened, there was a bomb scare, what would the comms be? And it was a whole day's exercise on going through what you would do. And I remember thinking, this is ridiculous. Is this really going to happen? However, we now know in the world of news and how life sometimes happens, some premises have had security breaches. Some have had some really terrible situations with terrorism. And actually, I started to realise as we went through this day's exercise, it was worth its weight. It was pretty heavy, but it was really interesting in terms of, and part of that was training for those tough conversations and scenarios.
I could give you a specific example of that. I remember when I first worked in radio back in the day, and I was working on the overnight shift. And I had just been given my big Bible of what to do, when, what to say, how to say everything. There was nothing there in case of emergency. And this is genuinely true. Week 2, someone phoned up the radio station. And of course, unless you're working in a big city, it's just you. And this person phoned up and I picked up the phone because I'm working in this regional radio station on my own. And he said to me, there's a bomb in the building, get out.
Ooh, right? Your heart must have dropped.
So I was brand new in radio. You know, I'm talking to the whole of East Anglia, and I'm thinking, what do I do? It's not in this big Bible. And so it was a really awkward conversation because all I had was the CEO of the company. I'm like 20 years old talking to this very senior person. That's the only number I had. And I had to go, I'm really sorry to bother you at 2 o'clock in the morning, but this is what's happened.
You did the right thing in the circumstances.
But you're not sure, and there's a little bit of muddling around. You've got to be really careful about these things.
And I think ultimately, you can't prepare for every scenario, but you can certainly look at some themes of ones that are going to be the most pertinent to your business, that are going to bring the most risk and the most consequence. I worked for a care home group as their head of PR and media for a time, and I had to come up with a risk list of the things that could happen if there was a fire at the care home. And then we had 14 in the group at the time. There's more, but at the time I was looking after 14 different care homes and all their media and marketing and PR, and I had to come up with a risk list of what would happen if any of these scenarios happened. If there was a death, if there was a fire at the home, if there was theft, if there was, you know, malpractice, I had to look at all of that. If they went through certain CQC and certain, you know, reviews that weren't great, and we had to try and anticipate. So training for those tough conversations is really important, because it really helps you to go, right, I may not have everything I need now, but I've got the bare bones. I know who to call, like you did in your scenario. I know what to call them for. I know the turnaround time in terms of what information I need. So that's really helpful. And it sounds like you had a printed version. It sounded like the Yellow Pages, Darren, like a big kind of thing that you'd stand on that uses a door wedge.
Well, this was 1993. The internet was just about
invented. It was what it was. But, you know, it's whatever form it takes, whether it's a digital document, I'm old school, I think a paper thing is always really useful in case networks go down, that you've got it. But having that template and playbook that helps you. So if there is a sensitive topic that's on your list, you know pre-approved language, you know frameworks, you know, actually, we're dealing with this, and this is how we're going to deal, this is how it's going to unfold and what we can do to actually approach it. And then also, coming back to my previous point, look at that cross-functional alignment. Who else needs to know that will help you? I think it's safe to say you won't have all the answers by yourself, and that's fine. I'm not a numbers person, and I don't really want to be. There's other people who could do it far better than me. Bring them into the conversation at the right time to actually say, I want to upskill my team about a scenario that happens. Say, for example, we need to make an announcement about funding that's been cut or financial challenges that we're having. I'm going to need you in this scenario. Prep them, brief them, even before it happens, just so that they know that if this scenario ever happens, they know how to agree on comms. They know what to sign off. They know what to say. They know what jargon to avoid. And that will mean that actually, as a comms person, you are leading this exercise and bringing in that expertise when you need it, without feeling that I need to now become an expert in HR, finance, tech. You don't. But you do need to know the appropriate people to bring in, and you need to be able to signpost them and get them to understand what you need from them and what they should be delivering to you.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, feedback loops. I'm a true marketer. I love feedback. And not just for the sake of ask people and then bury it away. When the dust has settled and when you've had a chance to cool your brain and actually absorb what's happened, use that feedback. What could we have done better, quicker, slicker? What could we have executed? Did we get hold of the right people? I think it's knowing those feedback loops that allows you to upskill your team, upskill your business and your organization, and to know, actually, next time we should have brought in the CEO a bit quicker, or actually next time we need to make sure that we do more customer outreach. I had a really good meeting recently with a business who are doing so well. They do gift plants that you can order from their website. And basically, they ran a really good promotional offer. It was so good, they sold out and they couldn't satisfy the offers. And the CEO said to me, you know, we were so successful with this deal. Goodness me, we didn't have enough plants to actually send out. And I said, what did you do? And they said, we spoke to customer service. We spoke to our marketing team. So every part of the business knew and understood how this decision impacted them. So that when customer service got the call saying, where's my plant? I've paid for it and it hasn't turned up. They knew what to say.
Yeah.
And that's the important thing. And he's now said that from it, they've learned what they can do going forward and how you manage that. So, yeah, that's the thing. Upskilling your teams.
That's very true. And just, you know, it's in some scenarios where, you know, there's bad news that you can plan for, then you can respectfully practice them as well. In the world of broadcast, for example,
obituary,
you know, I often would run a radio station, and it came in very handy for the passing of Princess Diana, but would all regularly check the box, because people are coming out of the building all the time, and check the obit box, make sure everything was there, and in different scenarios that it was there. And then
it's true.
When she did pass away, then, you know, as it caught us all by surprise, we all, that's one thing we know where we were, we're able to pretty much within a very short space of time, within about an hour, know what we were doing.
And that's the great thing with a plan. Like you say, Darren, in the world of radio, it's an obituary plan that tells you who are the senior leaders or senior figures that, if the news comes up that they're injured or they've passed away, right, you know the names. You then know ultimately what you do. So in music radio, you go to very solemn music that's quite, you know, maybe classical music, nothing too upbeat. And then you know what announcements, what news, and you have that plan. And, you know, from our experience of working in broadcasting, I think that was probably my first exposure to a contingency plan in that sense, having the OBIT procedure and understanding and revising it as well as different leaders and people come in and out of our lives. What we're now telling you in the comms world is to take the benefit of our knowledge and expertise, and we're now moulding it in more of the business or corporate sense, but equally it's still got the same messages to it in terms of what we do. So yes, there we go. That's what happens when it comes to trying to make sure that when you're dealing with difficult situations and announcements, it's not easy. We've both worked through it ourselves, having worked in various different media and marketing comms teams, but there is a method to help you make life easier.
Yes. So there you go. That's difficult news. Doesn't have to damage trust. It can reinforce it if you're clear and caring and prepared. And also think beyond the announcement. You know, think about, you know, that follow through and support is really important too, isn't it?
It really is. I think hopefully, even if you're in a small team, you've got some colleagues and allies that you can rely on, trust, cry to, scream, shout, whatever you prefer. to get through it, because I always remember when I worked as a press for coronavirus for local government, and yeah, I remember the first day that those first cases were announced, and we did it and we worked through it. And the end of the day, you know, a really good trusted colleague stayed and worked late with me that night to get it all done. And so yeah, having that support network's important.
Great. And thank you very much for listening. There's obviously our show notes that can help you with this. If that's kind of sparked some thinking, then you can have a look at the show notes with Louise's guidance on there, and also some deeper thinking behind communication in this sort of environment. You can go to our website. It's at landanddeliver.co.uk. That's landanddeliver.co.uk. But until next time, see you later.
See you soon.